Seamus Balfe, out here in the open, you're working away on gardening and minding trees and that here just outside Blessington. But you're from, where are you from?
I'm from Kyleberg, Lacken, Blessington, County Wicklow.
That's a nice spot.
It's nice up and over the hill, looking down on the lakeside, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the Balfes, your own people, the Balfes.
Well, my father and mother lived there, and my father's name was Jimmy Balfe. My mother's name was Rose Balfe. And when there were five of us in the family, three girls and two boys. I'm the eldest of the family. My brother Michael was next, and Mary was next, and Roseanne was next, and Esther was next. So there were a year or two between every one of us, and we went to school in Lacken, the small schoolhouse in Lacken. Walked to school and all the time, winter and summer. A mile and a half down the road, and in the summertime we walked in our bare feet, and in the wintertime we brought two sods of turf under our arms for the school teacher to keep the fire going. Everybody had to do that when we were going to school in Lacken. That was started in 1943 or 44, and difficult times living then. My father worked on the county council, and he had about 10 or 12 sheep and a couple of cows, and that was it. And
what was he doing for the county council?
He was working on the county council with a horse and cart, the bin man in Blessington here, in this town. He was the bin man.
I'll go away, really?
Yeah, with a horse and cart.
And so how did that work out?
He called at every house where there was a bin outside the door. There weren't that many houses around Blessington at the time, and a couple of factories and a hotel, the Doucher Hotel, and he took away the bins, and there was a dump down here where the scouts den was in Blessington, a huge big filling had to be filled, and it was filled up. That's where he tipped up the load on the bins all the time.
Was it a round galvanised bin at the time, was it?
A round galvanised bin. There was no such thing as plastic bins at the time, and some of the money in sacks and bags, yeah. You know, plastic bags, the usual.
But was there much rubbish in those days, as a matter of interest?
There wouldn't been a lot, no.
You know, I mean,
people were self-sufficient. Packaging was very limited, you know. People were self-sufficient, and there was very little rubbish at all, really, you know. Domestic waste was very on a limited scale, really. And when we were going to school during those years as well, we had to bring ration books with us. There was rations during the war at the time. We had to bring it to the local shop, Mrs. Balfe in Lacken, at the school gate. And we got our limited amount, the same as everybody else did, like small bit of sugar and butter and small bit of bread, brought it home. And that was shared among us all. And we all worked when we were young, and my father and mother helping on the farm. There's small bit of crops they would grow, and making hay, and on the bog up on the mountains over cutting turf in the summertime, bringing them home with horse and cart. And it was very enjoyable, but difficult work at times, but very enjoyable. Everybody in the area did the same thing. We were no different. That was the way of life in the area.
But Lacken is a place, I'm sure, that you know, a lot of people lived, worked, and then either died out or left the place.
Yeah, well, that was the school years, and leading on to teenage, there was very few went for secondary school from Lacken, because there were people couldn't afford it, and there was no secondary school in the area. There was no secondary school in Blessington. The nearest was in Ballinglass. So there were a couple from the area went, and that was it. But the rest carried on, and when they got to 15, 16 years of age, they all left and went off, emigrated. Things were very bad that time in the mid-50s and the early 50s, including myself. I left in 1953, and I went to work in Dublin in a grocer's shop. Grocers and off license, serving my time as an apprentice, which was a big deal then, for £1 a week. And came home every Saturday night. And then in the summertime, on a Wednesday, on my half day, I would cycle home from Leonard's Corner on South Settler Road in Dublin to Lacken. Help my father at whatever he was doing for the evening, and go back the next morning.
Where were you boarding?
I was boarding in Blarney Park off Sundrive Road in Kimmage, with a relative. My father asked her. She was a Sis Kavanagh from Granamore over here in Ballymount. She'd married a man in Dublin, and she was living in Blarney Park. And he asked her, would he'd take me in while I was in Dublin, and she said she would. And I lived there in 91 Blarney Park with two or three other boarders she had it in as well, one from Leitrim and one from Granamore up there in Ballymount as well. The three of us were in full board.
Yeah. Well, now, before we come to that stage of your life, let's backtrack again a little bit, because I know you've taken a lot of interest in past history of your own
area. But talk to me about the people that lived in Lacken and are now gone. If you know, you know, the old houses, the old bahons, and in the old fields.
Yeah, well, they were mainly small farmers with a small job, like working in the sand pits in Doran's here in Blessington, pits where is Roadstone now. They'd cycle from Lacken and work over there loading lorries by shovel. They were all loaded by shovel in those days. A lot of men worked there, and quite a group of them worked in the granite quarries in Ballynockan as well. They became stonecutters and they worked there. And that mainly was the only jobs in the area, like pits in the road, the sand pits, and the quarries in Ballynockan. Other than that, it was small farming, and that was it. In the early 50s, the forestry department took over a lot of the mountain in the area, and they employed quite a few lads sowing trees in the forestry. And at this moment now, they're being removed for commercial timber, having done their 50-year stint, or 54 or 5-year stint, and they're mature now. And the people that were sowing them then are at my age now in the 70s. They're looking on at their the fruits of their work, all the mountain being stripped, cleared away, and being drawn away for commercial timber.
Exactly as you remembered it before they were put
Yes, out. Well, we had our cows on the mountain, a couple of cows, and everybody else would have their run. You'd have to go there in the evening to get the cows, bring them home to milk them, and it was on this land where the forestry is now. The cows just roamed around the mountain everywhere. You wouldn't know where you'd find them. It'd be an hour or two looking for them, bring them home. And that was everybody's pattern in the evening. They had to do that kind of thing, you know, bring them home and milk them. And that was part of the way of life, like, that you had to have the milk for it. And then my mother was good at saving the cream of the milk, and we used to churn. She'd make the butter, and we didn't have to buy butter when she'd have butter most of the time, you know. And she made bread, and she was good. She had hens, and she sold eggs. In Dublin, went once a month to Floods in Terneur, a big shop in Terneur. She'd bring a box of eggs, and she'd get bacon for it, and bring home the bacon, as they call it. And that would do us maybe for the month.
All right, so there was no change of money. It was just
Just exchange of eggs for goods. Imagine, that was a pattern again in the area. Quite a lot of people
going
did
back
it.
To the mountain, was that commonage?
Commonage, and still is. It's just up there. It's only 4 or 5 miles from here. And all the people cut turf, and there could be 50 or 60 families cutting turf there in the summertime from the whole area, like, you know. And they drew the turf home with horses and carts. Some would have donkeys and carts. But the first lorry that went up there, the first lorry that went up on that mountain was from Ballymount. A man named Edward Connor, a publican in the Star in Ballymount, the other side of the lake there. He started drawing turf for the National Health, who wanted fuel in Dublin to fuel the social buildings and the social services. They had to be heated, and they bought all the turf around the area they could get on the mountains. And he started drawing them. And he went up there in 1944, and that was the first lorry I was in. I was only 7 years old. And he used to draw mostly in the night time as well. They needed so much of it, and it was by the ton, the local farmers. They bought it off the local people by the ton. And he'd get it weighed, the docket and all, and he'd come back the next day, and he'd give you your docket. And they got paid. I can't remember how much it was a load, but it wasn't very much anyway. But we were often up there in the night as chaps loading lorries for to go to the Phoenix Park. All the turf was dumped in the Phoenix Park along the main road there, and the remnants of it were there for years. When I was working in Dublin after, I used to see this big long line of turf mould where all the turf was, came from all the mountains, the Dublin Mountains and the Wicklow Mountains, was there for years, and that was used to heat all the essential service buildings in Dublin, like hospitals and homes and government buildings and all like that.
Was that a godsend, you know, to the local people?
Pardon?
Was that a windfall?
A windfall. That was a bonus to get that type of money at home, you know.
It just gave that extra few bob.
Yes, to keep the family going. And that was it.
But existence in the area, you know, when you were living there, you had... Like you said, you grew up with very little, but at the same time you had quite a lot.
We had the benefit of the mountain for to graze, and I suppose there was trees would be sawed down like these during the winter time for to create extra fuel and all like that, because if you had a bad summer, the turf wouldn't have been dry, and they'd have to try and burn them with
timber, cut down branches of timber and trees here and there, and we used a cross cut that time, one with two handles on it, like a handle there and a handle there, for about four times that length. It'd be half a day cutting down a tree and cut up a bit of it then.
Seamus, can you describe to me what it was like leading up to the Second World War? You know,
yeah,
things weren't too bad, and then all of a sudden, you know, there was a complete close down.
When the war ended in 1944, shortly after the war died, 1947 came, and it was a terrible year of bad hardship in the area. It was a snow that lasted for 3 months. It snowed from the beginning of December until the end of February. And we got a lot of hardship then. Many, including ourselves, lost all our sheep. They were buried in drifts in the mountain. And we had two cows in the shed, a little small cowhouse, as we called it, out in the yard. And we kept feeding them hay there, and they kept them alive to milk them morning and evening. But
Before the war is all, you were a youngster going to school.
Yeah, very difficult.
Yeah, but I know, but there was still, you know, there was still petrol for cars on the road.
There was no cars in our area at all.
Was there not?
No, not a car. Not a car in the area. No cars in our area. It was a poor area, you know, and up in the mountains, and nobody could afford a car. It was unthinkable to get into a car. Bicycles. Everybody had bicycles, a horse and carts. Well, my mother used to come shopping to Blessington every Saturday, and I used to drive the horse and cart into Blessington. She used to shop in Twyford's in Blessington, tie the horse to the tree with the rope, and go into the shop and listen to her talking to him all the time about hardship and everything like that. Oh, I used to dread it. Big steel wheels used to be on the cart. Sit on the seat on it was the tailboard of the cart across the centre of it, and sit on it, and that was the way all the way, the 5 or 6 miles to Blessington, the same back. It was dreary, but that was the way everybody did it. You met everybody going like that all day Saturday. Was shopping day in the town for the local groceries. To do for the week. And the fair day was on the 13th of every month in Blessington. And my father would, maybe 2 or 3 months of the year, would sell a few sheep or maybe 1 or 2 cattle. And you'd start out at 4 o'clock in the morning, walking from Lacken to Blessington with the sheep and cattle, and stand around the town all day and hope that you'd sell. Sometimes you would, and more you would, more times you wouldn't, depending on the group of buyers around. Fairs were very traditional all over the country, and would be crammed with sheep and cattle all day around the side roads as well as in the main street. You know, there was big stock in the area because of being a farming area. So it was very difficult. But during 1947, the big snow, something happened beside us that was very, very hard to believe. There were two elderly men living in a house named Pat and Phil Malloy. One of them died in 1947, Patrick Malloy, in the big snow. And they were living in terrible circumstances. They were two bachelors. And there was a thatched house right beside us in the field next to us. And there were 6 big beech trees over the house. At the front door, but they were very tall, never anything cut off them or anything like that. But when this man died anyway, all the neighbours gathered in the snow, which was 20 foot high, drifts up, and they gathered, and they went for this lady to lay out the man before the wake started. My father went down to Mrs. Brennan in Temple Bowden, and he brought her up to lay her out, and there were quite a few people there, but I was brought up anyway. I was 10 years old, and it was a big treat for me to be brought up there. I was the eldest of the family, but it was only a couple of 100 yards from the house anyway. My mother brought me up, and they were tidying up the house and all, and he was waked on a settle bed. They lived in a settle bed on the floor, and it folded up during the day, and they waked him on that. But anyway, this woman came, and she laid him out and put a habit on him and laid him out, and my father and Andy McAvoy and a man named Patrick Hurden, they got a cross cut, and they cut down a few big branches off the tree that fell down on the snow. It wasn't difficult to reach up to them because the snow was so high, and they cut them in lengths, and they made a fire on the big open fire. I can see it, 3 foot lengths of timber put on a huge big fire, and created a bit of heat in the house, which was very little anyway. They were very poor circumstances the two of them were living in. But anyway, the next morning, 4 guys, Mick Hurden and Tom Kelly and Jack Gallagher, I think, went to Blessington to get a coffin here in Blessington. And they had to drag it all the way with ropes over the drifts of snow along the road to Kyleberg, where this man was. They had 2 big ropes, like a reins, they called them, tied for a horse, and they tied it up. But while they were in Blessington, I always remember this. They met the bread van, a man named Isaac Hanlon, drove Kennedy's bread van. And he hadn't been to Lacken for 2 months with bread or anything like that to the local shop, and he said maybe you should bring out a few loaves to the people. There was no wrap bread that time. And they opened the lid of the coffin and filled it with loaves. And they stopped at every gate going to Lacken, and they gave a loaf to every house that they saw somebody until they were all gone. Now, you can imagine in this day and age offering a bare loaf out of a coffin to somebody with no wrapping on it, what they would say to you. But that happened. And they would tell that story themselves, or some of them are alive still, and they would tell you that. And the next morning, when that man was coffined, the next morning then they had to drag the coffin with the corpse over the big drifts to Lacken, a mile to the Lacken church, and drag him after the mass the next day to the cemetery in Temple Bowden Cemetery with the ropes as well.
When you say drag, what do you mean?
Pulled. Dragged it. Pulled the coffin along, you know, the coffin behind them. Pulling it with ropes over drifts and more guys holding it back that it wouldn't slide in on top of them and hurt them, you know. It's very difficult. So the ice, the snow was very same. It's frozen like a stone for 3 months. Never thawed. And it snowed every day, which meant it was accumulating. We had no cameras that time. We had cameras and took pictures of these things. They would be worth a fortune today. I often said it to Aidan. Aidan is a big cameraman there. Things like that would have been worth a fortune. But there was no cameras in the, and not even a Brownie camera. And they were the only cameras that were on the market at the time. They would have been worth a fortune.
Yeah, yeah. Those two bachelor brothers, you just said that they lived there in poor circumstances.
Yeah, they had a few sheep. But no cattle.
Was there a big turnout to that funeral?
Very big. All the neighbours turned out to it. All the neighbours turned out to it. And coincidentally, on the very same week, there was a man named John Osborne. He lived up at Kylebeg, the other side of the valley, with his wife. And they were a husband and wife with no children in a small little cottage. And this man called to see were they all right in the big snow. And he called, and this man, John Osborne, had been dead for a week. And his wife was on her knees trying to light a fire. And she was burning his boots to try to light the fire. Now, people in Lacken will tell you that. That's a common story. And he was dead for a week, and they had to go to Blessing and drag another coffin, pull another coffin by ropes up to the side of the hill. This was a more difficult place to get to. Very, very difficult. And that poor man died, and nobody could find him. But this man, the founder, Patrick Toomey, went back to the house and got a bag of turf and dragged it on his back across to the house, which was about a quarter of a mile from where he lived, along the side of the hill through the snow. And it was very difficult to light the fire.
What were the names of these places, do you know, Seamus?
The name of this place?
No, the names of the townslands that they lived in. You know,
Kylebeg as well.
Kylebeg as well.
Yeah, they were in the townland of Kylebeg. But Kylebeg is a big townland. There's a river runs down to the centre, and there's a valley like, and two slopes up onto the mountains on each side. Yeah. I'll bring you up there someday and I'll show
it
to you.
I'd love to see it, yeah. But yeah. The occupation mostly were hill farmers.
Oh, yeah. Hill farmers, as I've said to you, stone cutters and working in the sand pits in Blessington, in Doran's Pit.
Yeah. The houses, they were mostly thatched?
Mostly thatched. Nearly all thatched. Very few tiled houses. And my father was very good at thatching. I used to give him a hand to thatch and used to pull the rushes and all for him. And you'd go cut them first, and then you'd have to pull them and bring them up the ladder under your arm. And
where was he getting the rushes?
Up on the mountainside, as you went up by the side of the road, a lot of rushes were growing up there in the header and all that along the side of the road. And it was easy enough to get a cartload of rushes.
Was it?
Yeah, it was very, very easy. And they're still there, still growing there. And everybody got a load of them. And
what else did he use? The hazel stick, or did he use
hazel sticks for this, what they call
scallops.
We got them for tying in the thatching, putting a line of them along on it to keep the thatching from blowing off.
Did he have his own style?
Beg your pardon?
Did he have his
own side? Yeah, and I did it myself. Yeah, and he had his grey horse for ploughing and all. We did all that. He had his own side and his own sleighing for cutting turf. He was an independent man, but he's self-sufficient with everything.
Yeah.
He had everything, and he'd repair them himself if they were damaged as well. He was very good at repairing them.
Yeah. But the thatch itself, when he had it on the roof, was it a particular style? Like, you know...
Yeah, it was nice and neat and all of that. He was very good at it, keeping it tidy.
He's well
and
known for thatching.
He was, yeah. Well, not as a professional thatcher now, but he would do a good job. But nearly everybody did their own.
Oh, did they?
But there was one man in the area, Johnny Brennan. He was a professional thatcher.
Yeah.
And anyone could afford him got him to thatch. And he was very good, and he often asked me would I give him a hand to pull rushes, bring them up the ladder to him, which I often did. At my uncle's house, he used to do. My uncle, when my father was born, Tom Balch in Lacken. It was a big long house, and he used to come there every few years, attached to give him hand to do it, bring the rushes up on the ladder to him and all like that. He was a lovely man to work with, very pleasant, and get the scallops for him and on and twist them and bring them up and stick it in and all on the lines of scallops along the thing. Yeah. It was a bit of a craft at the time, you know, but no, everybody did it. No one took any particular interest in anybody doing it.
And did they make their own lime wash, you know?
Oh yeah, whitewash. We used to all whitewash the house and the wall outside and everything like that. Oh, that was a big thing in the summertime, you know. You never did it in the wintertime. You do it every month or every 6 weeks to keep it brightened up.
Yeah.
Particularly if there was visitors coming, you know. We had a settle bed. I was born in, well, I was born in Hollow Street in Dublin, but it was reared in a settle bed. My brother and I, the two, we slept in it. Yeah, settle bed all our lives. And then I've been going around festivals and things like that in Ireland in latter years. I see festivals on, or settle beds on show, and they're a big interest, a big feature, you know, particularly in a couple of places we go to, and they're on show every year, and it's fantastic to see them, you know, being restored and all like that, and they're really like new. But these would be old, but they'd be well maintained and well kept, you know, but there they are, they're still there, you know.
Yeah, and to think that, you know, that you, it was your... It was your cot. Your
yeah, it was our way of, and it was a seat in the daytime. It was,
yes,
folded
it was,
up.
Yeah.
You've seen them, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and in every October after the thrashing, we'd have a small thrashing with a small bit of oats. The mattress in the settle bed would be taken out, and the straw would be thrown out, and a fresh straw would be put in it, and that was the mattress for the year.
Oh, was it a straw mattress?
Straw mattress, oh, yeah. And a good shaking of DDT, and if there was any fleas in it, to kill it. I remember that well, and the smell of it, oh. DDT now is outlawed. It was a lice powder, they called it.
Yeah.
Be put into the, shook in the mattress in case any lice or fleas or anything like that would be in it.
Did you sugon the chairs, or were they sugoned up here as well? You know, the chairs.
Yeah, ordinary chairs. Ordinary chairs we had, yeah. Ordinary old type chairs and forums, a long seat.
But were they sugoned? Sugoned, you know, with straw?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah, they were, yeah. Did oh, they were. Well, yeah, and we sowed a small bit of oats every year, and we trashed that when the thrasher come around the area in October. Have a little stack of oats. Everybody had one. You bring in a few days in the area, you do the whole lot, you know. And everybody helped with the bigger thrashing. You'd be asked to go and give a hand at the Zellers and Tom Balch and Lacken, who had more than the average farmer. They were bigger farmers, and they kept a lot. They'd have more stock. And it was a big day to go there, and the threshing was a big thing. They'd have a few bottles of stout and things like that, and it was a big occasion. Like, when the winter was over and the big snow had gone and all, there was a film group came into the area to film a film called Captain Boycott. And Stuart Granger was the main actor in that with his horses, and it was done in another Balch family's, in Joe Balch's family yard across from where I lived. And you could see it going on all day, and it was the scene was an eviction of a poor family from a house, and it went on for weeks and weeks, but all the local people were employed in it as a supplement for crowd scenes, and I was in it myself, and we got 5 shillings a day, which was a terrible lot of money in 1947, and we were paid daily, and the adults got 10 shillings, and some got a pound, depending what they were asked to do. If it was strenuous or things like that, they got a pound a day. But everybody local were in it for about a month or two, and there was great scenes of joy over that, because it brought a few bob extra into the area, you know.
It brought excitement too, I'd say.
Yes, it did, because people never witnessed anything like this. Film stars from America coming to Lacken and all like that. It was incredible. But it's often shown, and we often look at it, and it's still being shown, that Captain Boycott. It's a great film, and it was a cowboy, of course, mainly then as well. You know, a lot of it, he was a cowboy, and he had a few horses. And they used to come from one end of the mountain down to the other, and they'd be filming it from this yard. And you'd see all the horses coming. They asked my father permission to come down through his land, and he allowed them to come down and crossed all the ditches, come right across the valley into where we were.
What were you doing? What was your part in the film?
My part was just sitting on the ditch in the yard, at along with all the crowds and crowds more, waiting for the eventual scene to happen, where they had an ESB pole on a tripod in the yard, and they were testing the door with it all the time, ready to break in. And that was the scene. That would go on all day, every day, until the big thing, bang, burst. An ESB pole now was a big thing that time, on a tripod in the yard, and they burst in the door and evicted the two people in it, you know.
Yeah. Talk to me about the lake. The lake. That's a man-made lake.
It's a man-made
lake.
Do
you remember it? You remember it quite well before the water was there.
No, it came in 1939. I was only 2 years old. It started in 1939. It took 3 years to fill. In 1942.
You wouldn't remember it, but what are the stories about?
Well, I know all about all the people that lived under there. Well, it was a massive piece of a massive area of turf bog and farmland all under, and there were ESB wanted it for this water for Dublin and electricity. So they went around and paid £9 an acre to the farmers for to get them out of it, and they got them out of it all eventually anyway, except a couple refused to go. They wouldn't accept the terms, and one was William Twyford, the man that had a shop up here in the main street of Leicester, and he was rescued off a settle bed or a table at the last minute before he was drowned. It was coming up around him. He was rescued. Everybody knows about that. That was a big thing. And there was another man named John Callaghan. He did the same. He was standing on the table and they had to rescue him as well. He wouldn't leave. Yeah. But they rescued him anyway. And he became, John Callaghan became a figurehead in the area because of his great feat in holding out at the last. And he was brought around and acclaimed in every house with a party every night for months after he was rescued. He was a character, all right, definitely a character, a bit of a fun living man, and he loved a few jars and smoked a pipe and things like that, you know. But people made a great fuss of it, what he did anyway.
What was it like? Have you any idea of who were the people that lived where the lake is now?
Well, there was a man named Tim Lennon, and he has a son named Matty Lennon now, who is a writer in books. He wrote a lot of books, and he writes in Ireland's Own every week. And he's a bus inspector in Dublin. His only son he had. Now, Tim Lennon, they lived in Kyleberg as well, and he died there about, he must be 15 or 20 years dead, him and his wife, and this man, Matty Lennon, is his only son. And he's a great historian as well, and writes a lot of stories about the area, and the way his father used to pronounce words and all like that. He'd write stories about them, you know. And very, very good. But there were Quinns lived down there, and there were Cullens. They were all accommodated, most of them were accommodated in County Kildare with small farms and cottages. And there are a lot of them are still living down there, and their children are still living in Donadie and around there here. I know quite a lot of them still. Yeah. They were moved, and a lot of them were moved just out onto the edge of the lake and are still alive right around it, you know. Cullens and Lawlers, I'm trying to think of all the people there. If I had more time, I would have 50 names for, you know. Sure, but my father always talked to me about it all, yeah. You know. It was my father was so interested in all the history of the area that I took an interest in it, you know. And I always listened to him. And the regret I have mostly, I suppose, is that I never recorded or wrote it down or anything like that. But in those times, you were trying to make a living for yourself and you hadn't time to be thinking about history or anything like that. When I got up to 15, I headed to Dublin, you know.
What about the sounding of the words that you spoke about? You know, that have you, in the accent?
There's a special accent in the area, and people have a way of pronouncing things and saying
things. Like what now? Give me an example.
I have to think now. Let me think. The pronunciation of names, I suppose, was the common thing in the area. People would call curtains, as we call them today, would be Corneens. And Gallagher's would be Gallagher's, and Zeller's would be Ellard's. They wouldn't say Zeller's, Z-E-L-L-A-R-S, that's the name of the publican in the area, the local pub, and they would call them Ellard's, and Lennon's would be Linen's. You know, they'd never pronounce it as it's pronounced today. People had had their own way of saying different things. McAvoy's would be Max. You'd never say McAvoy, and they lived beside us. A family lived beside us, a lovely family, six of them, and they went off to England, most of them in the 1950s as well. Five of the lads went to England in the 1950s. They were all lovely family. They're all back now, retired, and doing well for themselves in Ireland after 40 years in England.
Was that a very prominent thing? Do you remember your dad's, the way that he would structure words and put them together?
Yes, I do.
You
know, yeah,
you would have changed now because you went into the city and you worked there since a youngster.
Yeah.
So like you would have changed.
Well, I moved around a lot in life after, and worked with a lot of people, and yeah. I had a different outlook on life then, you know.
But your father, no, your father.
My father was a really pleasant gentleman, liked by everybody, and. He wasn't rough, he was very kind to us all, and he got a good rearing himself. There was 14 in his family. eight boys and six girls, and he was very kind to us all, and he would never hit us or anything like that, or be cruel to us or anything like that. He was very good and give you a few pennies for sweets and all like that, you know, at weekends. And he liked going down to the local pub for to have, he didn't drink much, two bottles of stout maybe, and he was very good at singing local songs. And
had he a good grasp of the language as well? You know,
of the English language. He had a very good grasp of the English language.
What about the Irish then? Irish wasn't
spoken much by the locals in the area, you know, but we learned Irish going to school, of course, you know. I liked Irish going to school. It was one of my favourite subjects, was Irish. I loved it, and I still do, and I'm still, at this moment, attending Irish classes here in Blessington with a group of people who have set up to replenish Irish in the area. So I've been gone to a few classes in that. I have the origination of Lachlan out at home, and I forget it at the moment now. You have me on the spot, you know. I have records of everything that I've gathered up through this man and with a few more in the last few years. I've gone a lot into history, and I'm on the History and Heritage Committee here in Blessington.
Yeah, but the place names are important, aren't they? You know, to...
Yeah.
And with the Irish, you can break them down and you can get them...
Yeah, well, the mountain up where we cut the turf now above it was called Blaine Loss. Blaine Loss. Now that was, I could never discover what the meaning of that mountain, the Ridger Mountain above it, and Black Hill was the other one, and Surtle Hill was another one, and there was a lot of funny names around. All right, Temple Bowden was another townland in the area, and Lachlan Fall and Shrocken, and Lugnagun, Black Rock, you know, they're all the Carrig, they're all the local townlands in the area adjoining our town land, you know what I mean? And they're Ballinastochan and Ballynochan, they're all local as well. Ballinahown is where the lake was, Ballinahown they call it. There's a lot of history going on, being written about that at the moment, a lot of books being written, and a lot of films being shown about it as well by people who had a lot of photographs that have been got together, a lot of films being shown about it, and I've seen a lot of them myself, and they're fantastic, you know? Because there were two roads across where the lake is, and they went straight to Bartinglass. Instead of coming into Blessington, you went straight where the lake is and out at Hollywood, Ballymount over there and on it, Bartinglass.
Did a German plane go down there one time?
A German plane landed on Black Hill, or crashed into Black Hill in the night time in 1942, 43. It was a German, so we're being chased by the German bombers.
There was a plane during the Second World War that crashed locally there.
Noria bomber landed on, or crashed into Black Hill with four guys in it, and it was being chased, they said, by a German bomber. And it crashed in the night time in a fog. And nobody knew it crashed until the next day. A man named Tom Kelly and his son Paddy were going up to the bog to either foot turf or cut turf, and they came across it in the fog where they were going. And the seats were ejected from the plane, and the three of the guys were still in the seats, but they were dead, and they were the wreckage was all over the top of the mountain. It had struck the mountain in the fog, they couldn't see it. So Tom Kelly came back down and raised the alarm, and the local LDF in the area got together, and they carried down the remains of the men, and they were brought into Blessington here, and the funeral was in Blessington, and all the British relatives of the four guys, and they're buried in the local church here in Blessington with headstones and all here, and their names are all on them, and they come over every year in November and Poppy Day around that time for to commemorate their loss and all like that, all the relatives and the RAF. So that was there's a landmark there now. About 20 years ago, a few guys got together and put a large granite boulder on the area where it happened, and all the names and all are all inscribed there in black on the top of the mountain.
What about the quarries up there? You know, the quarries gave a lot of employment.
They did, yeah. They were big, and there are a lot of monuments and buildings built around Ireland and across the water in Liverpool as well, with granite out of Ballynochan Quarry. And it was drawn by horse and cart to Dublin and to all the different sites. And it was drawn... there would be contractors, like local men who got into the job of contracting, and they'd have two or three horse carts of their own, and they'd be sitting up on a load, and they'd have a horse behind with a load as well, coming behind, or maybe another one behind that, or another one. It'd be all at the one contract,
kind of relay.
The one convoy, a relay,
yeah.
And they'd have control from the one in the front.
Very good.
And yeah. That was the way they used to draw or haul the stone into Dublin on a daily basis. That happened. There was quite a lot of that in the area.
Did your father take part in?
No, he didn't. No, he was involved in the local council.
Yeah.
County council.
All right.
Yeah,
he's
working
he's
as a bin man.
Council,
yeah. That's right.
Seamus, tell me about yourself now. 14 years of age, you were.
Left school at 14, and in 1949 or 50, my mother got TB, and she was taken to a sanatorium in Rathdrum in County Wicklow. That's out at the back of Wicklow. And she was in St. Kevin's Sanatorium there for a year and a half or so. My father used to go on two bikes every day from Lacken to sanatorium to visit her every Sunday. Never missed a day on a Sunday we went. And that was hard going, you know. But I had my sights set on working in the city. And, you know, there was nothing in the area regarding plywood in the area. And I decided that I would go to Dublin. And I saw an advertisement in the paper for grocer's assistance. And I applied and I was brought for interview and I got it. My mother brought me for the interview. And that was in 1953 or that, you know. 1953, I went in May 1953.
What were you doing?
I was serving customers and weighing up sugar and butter and all kinds of foodstuffs from bags. And they had an off license as well. And every Monday I would have to bottle stout and bottle snipes for the, what they call invalid stout for elderly people come in and bought it. They assumed it would make them better and all like that, you know. And that was a big thing, invalid. They were called snipes, small bottles of stout. And he did that in the cellar all day Monday and capped them and all with a machine. And it was very interesting. But the funny thing about it is, well, it's not funny, I suppose. I never tasted a drink in my life. And here I was tempted with stout, but I never even tasted it. I just didn't like the smell of it. And every Wednesday I would come home, or on a Saturday, my mother would say, did you take the pledge? Yes, she would answer, I take the pledge, in case I get involved in bad company in the city and become an alcoholic or a drunk or something like that. So she plagued me anyway, and I worked quite near Sing Street School. And this particular Wednesday, we closed for half a day, and I walked down the South Circular Road, and I knocked on the Christian Brothers door, and I went in, and a brother Royal, I always remember, come on in, James, and take the details. And he took all the details, and I became a pioneer there. He said to me, did you ever taste drink? I said, never in my lifetime. Even I said, well, my mother would be making a Christmas pudding. I hated the smell of stout. I just never took it. And that's how I became a pioneer, and I'm still a pioneer, and I have a certificate on the wall at home. And that was in 1954. And I'm 54 years a pioneer.
Well, it's brilliant. All
and I never tasted a drink. Yeah. And I love going into where the drink is, even with Aidan and all these guys that I was with the football team for years. And you know what happens to the football team after matches? Everyone goes to the pub. And I used to love it. And I still do love it, going to the pub. I love pub atmosphere. I think it's great. I love it. And I love the smell of brandy, above all things now. You know, I love the smell of cognac. I've often smelt it out of a bottle. But I've never tasted anything in relation to alcoholic drink.
Yeah.
I've no regrets over that either.
So working in that kind of atmosphere, in that kind of grocery shop at the time.
Yeah, it was fantastic. There were six of us working.
It was a kind of shop, wasn't it?
The man that owned him was named Michael Dowling, and he was from Hackettstown originally in County Carlow. And he had six of us applied there. There were two long counters in there, one for the off-license and one for the grocery. And I always remember there was a man named Tom Langan from, or Bert Langan from Ballina and County Mayo. He was the senior man in there. He was the charge hand. He worked with me. And a girl named Teresa Sweeney from Ballyhaunis, who I go visit still when we go on holidays down that way. We go visit still. She inherited her local farm, married a guy down. No, she went to England after she left Dowling's in Leonard's Corner. I hadn't heard about her for a year, and I decided I'd look her up anyway here a few years ago. And I went down into Ballyhaunis, outside Ballyhaunis, where she was, and I found her anyway. She's in a place called Tureen, where the Baller of Romance all started. The big ballroom is still there in Tureen, a little village like Lacken, where I came from. I was only there with her a few months ago, and they're restoring that ballroom now. But anyway, she went back, she went to Luton in England, and she met this guy, and she married him. Came home, her father and mother were very ill, and they left her a huge big farm, and the man came, her and the husband came back, and they took over the farm. So I went down a few years after to when I found out where she was, and we had a great reunion. Sat down at the fire with my wife Maura and
reminisced about
working in, and she was delighted to see me, and I was delighted to see her. And we went back over the old days, and she said, "This is my husband, Sonny O'Reilly," and I said, "Lovely to meet you." And he said, "Great to meet you too, Shane." And I said to him, "Where did you come from, Sonny?" And I nearly died with shock. He says, "I come from Ballymore Users near Blessington." I said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah." And he says, "Is that where you're living?" And I said, "Yeah, that's where I live in Lacken." And I said, "You came from there?" He says, "I used to dance in St. Joseph's Hall," he says, "in the early 1950s. And I said, "So did I." And he started to name all the places around, the people around Blessington. I knew everybody, and he couldn't believe it. The man nearly died with shock that he was talking to someone from Blessington, and he married to his wife.
But, you know, just saying that the lifestyle and the way that people used to shop in those days, and, you know, a lot more attention was paid to the customer. And
oh, an awful lot. The detail to customers was very important. You had to have a nice civil approach to people, and people respect them. And there was a saying in the business that time, the customer was always right. Whether they were or not, you had to give in, and that was it. You could not argue. Yeah. The customer was always right. But I enjoyed the life.
How many years? I stayed
at that business for 1958. I suppose I stayed there for 5 years, 6 years. 6 years I stayed at that business. Not in the one place. I moved out of there. I got 10 shillings a week of a rise, and I moved to a shop in Camden Street near the Bleeding Horse pub at the moment. Shop there called Russell's, and I worked there for 2 or 3 years. And I got married when I was in there in 1958. I met my wife, and I met my wife, Maura, in Lacken. Her sister was married to a guy from Lacken, and she used to come out, Jimmy Cahill was his name, and he used to come out to the house in Lacken every year with his wife on summer holidays, and they brought this, her sister Maura,
yeah.
And she decided she'd stay in Lacken with these two people, Stephen Cahill and Willie Cahill, or Lizzie Cahill, sorry, and she stayed with them, and on holidays, and I used to be up and down the road, and Stephen said to me one evening, or one morning, as I was coming up in the shop, he said, "Come on in for a minute, Shane." He says, "I have a visitor in there." He didn't say who. So I went in, and there was a settle bed on the floor, and Maura was asleep in the settle bed. And I looked, you know, and I said nothing. He said, "Do you know who that girl is?" I said, "Now, how would I know?" I said. And he said, "That girl is Lily's sister," he says, "Jimmy Cahill, my brother's wife, sister." And he says, "She's just out here for a few days, holidays." I said, "Fine." And we had a cup of tea with Lizzie and Stephen, and I went off home about my business. There was a dance in Ballynochan quite near the following Sunday night. And I went to the dance, and I met Maura there. And we used to all walk to the dance, and we walked home, and we were together then. And Maura lived in Dublin, in Rackgar. And she worked, ironically enough, on the South Circle Road near where I worked, across the road from where I worked. She worked in Prescott's Cleaners and Dyers of Distinction, as they call them. She was a receptionist there. And we made a few dates and kept in touch. And we had two bicycles and went around different places in the city. Yeah, we kept in touch anyway. And we got serious about it, and I brought her out to meet my mother and father, and they were delighted with her, and she got on well. So we went in, and as they say, courted together for 4 years, and we got married in 1958.
But didn't the settle bed play a big part?
Played
in
a big part
life,
of my wife,
in
yeah.
Your that life, was
a,
in your that life.
Was a, I lived in one, and here I see my future wife asleep in one. But she was asleep, I wasn't talking to her.
Well, Seamus Balfe, you'll take me up someday, will you? And you'll show me around the
Whenever
area,
you make the arrangement, I'll be there, because I'm only semi-retired. You know, I can take time off when I want from this man I work for, and there's no problem.
Well, I'd enjoy it. So, Seamus, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.